This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. In recent years, we've heard a lot about cases involving innocent people being sent to prison for crimes they did not commit, only to be released years later, thanks to advocacy work by organizations. The Ohio Justice and Policy Center is now looking to reform sentencing guidelines for those who actually are guilty but receive what activists perceive to be harsh sentences. Beyond Guilt is a new effort to advocate for shortened prison sentences for people who have reformed themselves. And joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss are Ohio Justice and Policy Center Executive Director and Attorney at Law David Singleton. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Michael.
And Christopher Avery. He was convicted of robbing a Reading bank in 2000. In 2007, along with an accomplice, they got away with $130,000. But after being caught, the pair was sentenced to 20 years in prison. They claimed they targeted the bank because they needed money to pay for college. In March of this year, both men were released early after nearly a dozen years behind bars. Christopher joins us in the studio. Welcome, Christopher.
How are you doing?
Join the conversation at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org or join us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll find your comments and your tweets. And David, I want to get into what this new initiative is and how it relates to prison sentences. But first, I think it's important that we understand Christopher's story for context. So I want to start there. Christopher, your story got national attention back in 2007. I want you to tell us about the circumstances that led you to decide to rob a bank.
Well, in 2007, I, as a grown child, basically a very young man, I ran out of money. Well, I didn't have the money to pay the actual tuition, and I didn't have job prospects in that time. I was an engineering intern for Kroger's for a moment of time. But I didn't get a call back, and the unrational step that I took was to rob. So, and it was very easy to get a gun, which is a conversation in itself. But I attempted to rob a check cashing beforehand. It didn't work out, and well, I don't know if that's the right term, but it was a failed attempt. And a few hours later, the next day, I robbed a banking establishment, and I was caught the same day. I confessed to everything that I did. I revealed where the money was. All instantly, it wasn't any type of back and forth between me and, you know, law enforcement. And so they retrieved the money, and I went to prison. And that's basically the story. I didn't have any, it's sad to say, but since I told on myself, I didn't have any bargaining chips. So I was sentenced to the 20 years. That's what I played out to.
How old were you?
I was 21
so
at the time.
You had been in school for a few years?
Yeah, I graduated in 2004.
From high school?
From high school, yes.
Okay, and this is 2007 when this happened?
Yes.
Okay, and you were a mechanical engineering student?
Yes, sir.
What was it you were hoping to do with your life?
Hopefully, I would have gotten into Fortune 500 company, which is, there are a few here, so maybe Procter & Gamble or GE, which were looking at minority students that they wanted to hire at the time.
And so you had an internship, and then it went away, and that's mm-hmm. when you felt this moment of desperation and got a gun and went looking for a place to rob.
Yes, unneeded desperation, because, I mean, hindsight, there was help. There was help for me in hindsight, whether through family support or through other means that were more rational and logical. But my mind didn't click that way at the time.
You did manage to get out of the bank with a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, you know, and I'm certainly not making light of this, but you don't mm-hmm. get the opportunity to talk to someone who's robbed a bank very mm-hmm. often. And I'm curious what you felt like at that moment, because you had a gun and you're holding up a bank and you're stealing mm-hmm. a lot of money when just not right. long before that, you had so many things going for you.
Right. What I felt, adrenaline. And when in the moment, I had on blinders, so there was only the money and the ability to pay off the tuition. That was the whole focus. And getting out with so much money, I mean, it wasn't a plan to get rich. It just happened like that. I mean, that amount of money, which is nothing to brag about.
Okay, so as we start to talk about this new initiative, I want to talk about your sentencing. You had to stand in front of a judge who had to look at you in the face and say, that's going to cost you 20 years. Exactly. What did you feel at that moment when you heard 20 years?
It didn't hit me as you would think it would. I heard the 20, but I was already kind of, I don't know if hardened is the right word, but I was expecting it, you know, through the time of being arrested and the time in the Justice Center and hearing what I was hearing, that, like I said, I had no bargaining chips, so I didn't expect too much leniency. I mean, mercy would have been great, but I really didn't expect it, so it wasn't anything that devastated me as the average person would think it would have, because I was so young, so it didn't.
And so, yeah. David, Christopher sounds as though he was a desperate college student who felt like he had been out of options and took this extreme step. Do you think then that the sentence that he received was too harsh?
Well, I do think 20 years is a long time for someone who has never been in trouble before. But let's make no mistake about it. What Christopher and what his co-defendant did was wrong. It was absolutely wrong, and they deserve to be punished. But 20 years was a long time. And our point is that Christopher is so much more than that afternoon in 2007 when he robbed a bank. He's so much more than that, and he shouldn't be defined forever because of that, particularly while in prison, he's turned his life around.
And so you have this new initiative at the Ohio Justice and Policy Center. Give us the basics of what this is.
Well, Beyond Guilt is our effort to focus on folks that many other people would give up on and say, we're not going to care if they rot in prison. We want to free as many people like Christopher who are guilty of what the government said they did, but they've turned it around. They've taken advantage of programming while incarcerated. They've served significant sentences and paid their debt back and can be safely released into the community. And the other thing that we want to do is tell these stories of overpunishment and redemption and try and get the system as a whole to think differently about sentencing for people who've committed serious crimes. There's a lot of talk about getting folks released from prison who've committed nonviolent drug offenses, for example. That's where a lot of the advocacy focus is at right now. But what about folks who've committed serious crimes who can safely be released? And if we want to make a dent in mass incarceration, we have to focus on people who've committed serious crimes.
And I'm wondering then, as you focus on these folks who have, you know, robbed a bank, that's one of our more serious crimes. It's the one thing that, yes, that we'll talk about very lightly. It's dramatized all the time in film that this is just a big thing for a criminal to do. Is it a tough sell to gain support from the public on this measure when you're talking about people who have committed serious crimes and trying to get them to feel some sympathy and some sense of leniency when it comes to their sentencing?
It may be a tough sell for some people, but, you know, in this case, and I want to give, thanks to Joseph Dieters. Joe Dieters actually joined our request to release Christopher early and actually I didn't represent Christopher. I represented
Andrew Butler,
his co-defendant. And Joe Dieters' office joined our request. They didn't oppose it. They didn't just stay silent. They said it's time for them to be released and to come home.
And Joe Dieters is the Hamilton County prosecutor would have prosecuted.
And nobody ever is going to accuse Joe Dieters of being soft on crime. Never. And for Joe to step up and say these men have served enough time was something that we really appreciate, and it tells us that there can be a movement that's built around this.
Christopher, as part of your effort to be released before the full 20 years, again, you served just over 11 years in a state prison. You and your co-defendant, Andrew Butler, you said you'd been rehabilitated. I'm curious what that meant to you to be to have been rehabilitated.
I don't think I used that term in particular, but I think my mindset has changed as far as, I mean, I grew up, you know, I thought and rationally, I think rationally now, I have more compassion for people because when I did what I did, I was in a selfish state. I didn't think about the people that would be harmed potentially, either physically or mentally. I didn't think about their jobs. I didn't think about my family or how it would affect them with me being incarcerated. All I thought was, all I saw was my problems and a way that I felt that I could solve them through the most speediest way possible. So I just have more understanding for other people, and being in prison is hard. And I'm one case, but I know a lot of individuals that were locked up since they were teenagers, 16, 17 years old, and they're now in their 40s and 50s. And these, from what I know of them, they aren't bad people. They made a mistake just like I may have, maybe for serious crimes, maybe for more serious than I've done. It's all a matter of opinion. And they've been in multiple programs just like I have. They reach out to the community. They've apologized publicly, and I feel they like hold some sort of contrition to what they've done. And, you know, I just want to do my part to have the public see us not as just a mass of, you know, criminals and just bottom feeders, but as individual cases and people who deserve a chance and to be looked at.
What was prison like for you?
It's, that's where I can put it. It's just oppression, whether through the staff or administration or through other prisoners through an extent, because they put, sometimes they create situations in such a way where it causes problems. For, well, one example is telephones to communicate with one's family and loved ones. Say it's 300 people in an area, a block or a pod or whatever you may call it, with three phones and only a couple hours to use those phones. That's going to cause problems in itself. Just living with individuals that they throw you with can cause problems in itself. To get anything done, healthcare is atrocious. The food is, I don't think, fit for human consumption a lot of the times. Well, one prison I was in that I started off in, Lebanon Correctional, it's infested with roaches. I mean, mice aren't, you know, uncommon. It's just a hard place for anyone. So you have to take strides to actually better yourself and to rise above. I mean, and it's all, like I said, it's a lot of good people in there too. So who you surround yourself with makes a big difference, even in the madness. If you surround yourself with a good group of people who actually are trying to be successful and go somewhere in life, which may sound strange to the person outside to go somewhere in life when you're in prison, but you can better yourself. You can get education. You can get a trade or a skill. You can lead a healthy lifestyle. So that's what I strive, made strides to do while I was in prison.
And so, David, this is what I'm curious about. When you hear about how bleak prison life can be, how dangerous it can be, and how easy it can be to get caught up into more trouble while you're there, is there a general concern about the rehabilitation component of the prison sentence or of the prison system?
Well, there are concerns. One of the problems is that there's not enough attention on rehabilitation. But that said, what Christopher just told you is an example of how someone, if they're determined to succeed, can take advantage of the programming that exists. That's what he did. That's what a lot of folks are doing, despite the difficult circumstances. And if you can come out of prison a better person, I want you to be my neighbor. I want you to be in our community. I want you to be contributing in a positive way. And that's why I'm so excited that Christopher and Andrew are now home.
And speaking of Christopher and Andrew, these are folks that you're close to now, and you represented Andrew when he was charged. How do you and your expertise determine that these two have been rehabilitated? What is it that you're looking for?
You take a look at their institutional summary, which is a compilation of the things they've done right and the things that maybe they didn't do right. And you look at that. You look at their security levels. Both Christopher and Andrew were minimum security prisoners, which means that they can follow the rules, that they take it seriously, that they have to live a law-abiding life. And you look at what programs that they take, what certificates have they earned. And in both of their cases, there was abundant evidence that they had been rehabilitated and redeemed themselves.
Christopher, you spent more than 11 years behind bars, and you've not yet been out 3 months. How do you think years from now you'll look at that chunk of time in your life? Do you think that you'll feel that those years were lost?
They were lost in a sense, but that's just a part of life. Everyone goes through something. I mean, that's a chapter, but I don't... You know, I don't feel it should define me, like, to move forward. That was just, you know, people get down. I mean, people go through things, and that's what I had to go through. That's what I went through. And I feel that I went through it strong, and I went through it with a clear mind, and I'm better for it. You know, it made me into a person that I don't think I would have been otherwise. And it sounds crazy, but I would never do it again. But when I went through and I came out of it, I'm appreciative of it. And so years from now, I feel that it will be a part of my story, maybe a big part of my story, but not everything.
So as part of your 5-year probation period, the judge ordered you to complete your education. Mm-hmm. So what do you plan to do in that respect?
Oh, I've already applied back to the engineering program, engineering at University of Cincinnati. I filled out my FAFSA, and I'm just waiting for a response of acceptance, which I totally feel is on its way.
So you will go back to where all of this started. How do you expect it to go this time?
Very well. As a man, I mean, as a man, it's no way on earth will I even have that pattern of or getting that desperation of mindset to go back to the mistakes I did then. So grants, scholarships, try my best to steer away from loans, but I will get my degree and I will live successfully and fruitfully.
And David, in our last 30 seconds here, how will you, as part of this program, keep track of people like Christopher to make sure that they're staying on the right path?
Well, we will. I mean, Christopher now is my friend, and he's my mentee. But I will stay involved with him, with Andrew. The judge actually ordered us to develop reentry plans for them, and we've done that. And every person we get released, we will develop a plan for to make sure that they stay on the straight and narrow and live productive and full lives.
David Singleton is the director of the Ohio Justice and Policy Center and an attorney. And Christopher Avery is soon to be a student again at a local university in an engineering program. Thanks to both of you for coming on and talking to us.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.